Okay. So this is Forrest Elise interviewing Lauren Christopher on May 26th at 6:20 for the Creative Push Project. All right. So if you could take us back to the conception.
Sure. Oh, well, my husband and I got married in May of 2010. And just from the get-go, I stopped birth control because it was that thing like you know, you're on it for so many years and you don't know how long it's going to take. So I stopped it when we got married, and I figured we'll just have fun, not stress, and just go for it. And so May, June, July, 2 months, 2 months, and I ended up getting pregnant like the first week of August. So it was way quicker than I really had anticipated, which was fine because, you know, then in hindsight, the way school worked and my job that I currently had, it all just fell out. All fell into place at the right time. So I got pregnant naturally, you know, and during that time I did have friends that were having a hard time, so it was really a big concern of mine. But the pregnancy came a bit of a surprise, like I said, because I thought it'd take longer, but it was so fun. Pregnancy was so fun. I loved being pregnant. And, you know, knock on wood, it was an uneventful pregnancy. Just, I felt like every time I'd go in the doctor, it would just be the same, like the same questions and the same answers, and nothing went off the charts, and I was very comfortable with that. So also just a little back story, my mom had natural births with all four of us. There's four of us, and she actually birthed my brother, who's older than me, at home. So that's kind of always been my experience of birth stories, is my mom natural birthing, natural, and when I say natural, unmedicated, of course. And so she was totally unmedicated, and that's really, and then so then my older sister has the oldest grandchild, who's a niece, and then the second oldest, who's my nephew, and she unmedicated. She had both of hers first unmedicated, and I was there for the whole time with my niece, and it was, to say the least, probably one of the hardest things I've seen anyone go through, but it was so triumphant, and I was like, that is amazing. And so then her second came, and he came within a couple hours. I think she, like, had him in, like, 20 minutes. And so I was like, okay, we could do this. And I was pregnant when he was born. So I was like, I'm going to try the unmedicated route. And so that was my birth plan. My birth plan was to just labor at home as long as I could, go to the hospital when I had to, labor there as long as I could, and just go for it. But about 2.5 weeks prior to her due date, my water broke. I had gone to lunch with a friend, and I got in the car to go, and I, you know, the same thing, like, did I pee my pants scenario, and I'm sitting there, and every time I'm, like, breathing or talking, it's gushing, and I call my husband, and I was actually on my way for one of my weekly appointments, and he's like, well, just still go to the doctor, and I'll meet you there. So I go to the doctor, and I had to tie a t-shirt around my waist, and I go in and I just look at the nurses and I said, I think my water broke, and she was like, yes, your water broke, you need to go to the hospital. So I went directly across the street to the hospital, and it was just a mess, as they always say, but it's not Hollywood water breaking. I mean, it's just the funniest thing, the way they portray water breaking in Hollywood, you know, the screeching to the hospital, the contractions right away. It's so, I mean, it's just a lot of liquid but nothing else. So we just hung out in triage for a long time while they cleaned everything up and got me checked in. And again, in my head, I was like, okay, I'll labor. I walked, I made them put a, I don't know exactly what they call it, but they just put like an entry port into my hand. So in case I need to have medication, they have to make sure they get that IV in me. So I just had them put that entry port so I could get up and walk and move. And that was, I want to say like 2 p.m. is when I was checked into triage. And I moved, I walked, and I was maybe 2 centimeters. I mean, it was a joke of a dilation. I mean, it was not, my body was like, besides the water breaking, it was like, not going to give this baby up. So we walked and walked, and I labored and labored. I had a ball, I stood, I puked, I showered, I pooped, I did everything. And finally at, I want to say about 4 a.m., so about 14 hours into this, after puking many times, I just looked up at my husband and I was like, that's it. I can't prove anything more. I'm done. I need to sleep. Because I was still. 14 hours into this, I was exhausted, and I just needed a break. I was tired, and I was only about 6, maybe 7 centimeters, and I still had to push. I looked at my husband, and I said, that's it, let's do it. So they scheduled the anesthesiologist, and he came in, and he gave it to me, and oh my gosh, from about 4 a.m. to 8 a.m.
I'm going to pause until her question is answered.
Okay. The good older sister. She got the Miss Manners Award at school today because she's the rule follower. Thank you, Lainey. You guys need a hush. So from like 4 a.m., 3, 4 a.m. to about 7 a.m., I just got the best sleep. Oh my gosh. I just slept. And there's a picture of me sleeping on the bed with my husband on the ball at my feet. And I just remember being in complete bliss. I was so relaxed. And I woke up and they're like, okay, you're 10 centimeters. And I'm like, thank the Lord. Why would a woman have do this any other way? So then I was like, my sister was in the room and I'm like, you're crazy, but this is great. So 10 centimeters, doctor came in, pushed. I felt like forever, but I think it ended up being like maybe 45 minutes I pushed. And she came out and really healthy. I think I tore a little bit. They didn't have to cut. I tore a little bit. And I just remember when she came out, I still could feel so much. I was really surprised. And afterwards, the doctor...
I'm just going to check over here.
Okay, can you guys go to the other room now?
It's okay over there.
Okay, good. Let's go to the other room. I just remember this sense of relief, oh my gosh, when she came out. And it was like, I told the doctor, I'm like, I seriously felt a lot of her coming out. And she said, that's normal. People think anesthesia just like numbs you completely. She goes, no, you can still feel that head and the fire and everything. And I was really thankful because, you know, that was the only thing in my head I was kind of feeling like I was going to miss out on. Lainey, can you please turn those off? That's too loud. Okay. Can you take Elsie's away? Just put those away for the rest of the night. We'll play with them tomorrow.
Does your husband make furniture or did...
We had somebody make this for us from Texas, yeah, out of an old house. You know, people in Texas, they have access to this beautiful barn wood. So a lot of people make businesses out of it, which is fantastic. So we paid someone to make it. So is that background too much? Okay. Okay. Lainey, can you please turn those off?
I didn't.
Okay, look. Okay, come here, honey. Come here.
I told her to turn it off.
Thank you. Can you please go upstairs to Daddy's room? And tell them that you guys are ready to go to the store. Mm-hmm. Have Elsie go with you.
Come on, Elsie. Hey.
Go tell Daddy you're ready to go to the store. She's like a truck.
Yeah, that's totally how I walk. My mom will be like, I could hear you coming down the grocery. Like, I knew which grocery store aisle you were in.
Right. She's a truck. She anything she does, she just breaks. So funny. So I, of course, lost where I was, but,
So you're talking about the fact that you could
feel it. Yeah. Right. And I was very proud of that and happy for that. So she came out and it was like, I remember looking at my doctor and just being like, oh my God, you get to do this every day. This is fantastic. This is a miracle. This is crazy. And I was just in, you know, of course you feel nothing after that. And she's sewing me up and cleaning me out and everything's going on down there. And I'm just in heaven, and you know, and the baby's healthy, which is huge, and my husband's so happy, and my mom was there. I'm pretty sure both my sisters were there. My dad might have been there, you know. You're kind of all blurred because it was like at that moment it was just Chase and I. So
Mom, had to go to the store, but he didn't even wake up.
Oh, really?
Oh, he's sleeping.
Okay. All right. Well, then can you go in the room, go in the living room and put on a show and don't play with those walkie-talkies?
But, Mom?
Yeah.
I'm watching the news.
Okay. Go turn the news on.
Ready
on. Okay, can you sit on the couch nice and quiet? And Elsie, you could go call her. Just be nice and quiet, please.
Is she actually watching the news?
No, I think she's pretending. Because every night, you know, some kids don't want you to stay up after them. They think they're going to miss out on things. Mm-hmm. She doesn't want me to go to bed. When she goes to bed, she wants me to stay up and watch the news. So she knows I'm still awake when she sleeps.
Aww.
So I always tell her, I'll go watch the news for 10 minutes and you go to sleep. So I think she's pretending to watch the news. She's so funny.
Can I actually backtrack with you?
Sure.
Okay, so
please.
If you can talk about the being pregnant part, like, you know, what you felt like when you found out you were pregnant, and it was this really early, and it was a little unexpected, and then, like, did you find out the sex, and was there anything about
good
being
question.
Pregnant that was a surprise, or, you know, any of that stuff?
Yeah.
Do you have a support network, you know?
Okay, so besides being, of course, surprised it happened so early, and it being an uneventful pregnancy, we did find out the gender, and we went in for the, you know, the anatomy, the 20-week scan, and the radiologist says, okay, do you want to find the sex out? And, you know, I'm like, yeah. And my husband, he's like, wait, you don't have to figure out, like, you don't have to for the health of the baby? And I was like, no. And he goes, no, then don't find out. And I was like, no, I'm not prepared for that. I need to know the sex of the baby. So we found out, and he goes, well, then promise me on the next one we're not going to find out. And I was like, okay, deal. Fair enough, because I hadn't really prepared myself to not find out. So we found out it was a girl, and, you know, did the whole traditional, you know, the hooper, you know, the post on Facebook, told everybody, all the gifts started coming in, and in Tucson, yes, I have a huge support system. I mean, I just have my mom and my sister who had two babies, and then my youngest sister is actually a NICU nurse, and she's, you know, she sees it all, well, the worst of it, you should say, but so comfortable with babies. And so I have just a huge support system there. And so through my whole pregnancy, you know, everyone treats you like you're kind of handicapped, and that's kind of fun, people coming over and checking on me all the time. And I was still working. No, I was not working. I was in school. So I was in school, and my professors were all, you know, super careful and cautious. They were being very cautious about, you know, making sure that I was comfortable. So through my whole pregnancy, I just had a lot of information. And I'm definitely not one to, I don't Google things. Excuse me, that's much too loud. You need to hush. Can we pause for a second? I'm going to go ask my husband if he can get up now. Okay.
Yeah, we're going.
Okay. So, and I was talking about just my enormous support system. I just had everybody. Oh, and I was also saying that I don't Google things because it kept me up late at night. And it didn't matter how much research I was doing. I learned my lesson very quickly that I could definitely find whatever answer I was not wanting to find, but I would find it. So I really stopped Googling things at the very beginning and just kind of letting things run its course. And then, so through the whole pregnancy, I like to just say that I was more naive than anything and just kind of let my body do its thing. And with being aware of what the baby was doing and, you know, and I trusted my doctor so much. I mean, she was just fantastic. And I knew that there was a chance she could possibly not be there for the birth. I was a little scared about that, and she said that's normal, that, you know, a lot of her clients patients would ask that she be there, and she can't be there for all of them. But luckily, she was on call when my baby came, so I was so, so relieved. So she was there for that one, and she actually was there, of course, for my second delivery as well. So we formed a really good bond together, and I just trusted her through the whole thing, and my sisters and my mom and a lot of women in my life. I just trusted them all, and I trusted my body the most. I just took good care of it, and as long as the doctor that actually delivered myself and all my siblings and my brother at home for my mom, he was very well known in Tucson, and I was able to come back in contact with him when I was pregnant. And so he said something to me that he had actually told my mom. And he was like, you know, do you feel good when you do that? And I said, yeah. And he goes, well, then the baby probably feels good. So if you don't feel good, then the baby probably doesn't feel good. So, you know, think about it like that. And that was, you know, that was really smart, because I think I was worried about like a hot bath or a jacuzzi or something. And he was like, well, if you feel good, the baby feels good. And so it was really a fun pregnancy. It was really fun. I loved being pregnant. And I loved having the baby, the birth, being in the hospital and feeling that no pain afterwards, just feeling so empowered. And like your body had just completed something that's so, so science fiction to me. It's just nothing can replace that. You know, and then of course after it all comes down, I mean, you know, you come down, you realize you have this infant now and you're not sleeping and they're sucking on your boob all day and you're just never clean. And so some of the reality sets in a few weeks after, and I definitely got a little of the baby blues after and felt like I was alone, and I was thinking this baby was way easier inside of me. If I could just put her back inside me, I was really happy then. And it's so much work when she's out here. And I remember thinking that, and nights were hard, and just my whole breastfeeding was challenging, just trying to figure out how to hold her, when she wanted to eat, what my boobs felt like. So it was definitely a, you know, whirlwind. And in hindsight, I look back at what I was experiencing after my firstborn, and I'm like, 99% of women feel that way at their firstborn. All of my friends that had babies after me, after their firstborn, they even some of the women that I trusted the most to have it together, just sleep deprivation will kill you. I mean, it just makes your brain mush and hormones. So I just see these women after their firstborn, and I'm like, I was not alone. And I tell them, you are not alone. This is all so normal. So I, again, in hindsight, I think those, do we need to wait for that to pass?
Is it a phone?
It is.
Yeah, we'll wait for that to pass. Okay. That's really good. I really love what you're saying. I think okay. That's really great stuff. Yeah.
I kind of went from like really high birthing to my postpartum. But
no, it's good. Also, can you, was there anything about the like, did you gain a lot of weight when you were pregnant? Did you have a lot of that, any of the negative stuff that you remember? Or was
okay.
there positive stuff that you were like, you know, my hair is so luscious? Yeah. And you know what I mean? Was
yeah.
there anything about that physical experience that was interesting? For me, it was like a disconnect between like me as I knew myself and then like me
growing
as like a vessel.
Human, right? Yes. That in itself is just the craziest thing to me. No, I felt like a very different person, but not in a negative way, just in this like superpower way. Like this human was growing inside me, and I did not gain a lot of weight. I mean, it's not that I felt like glowing and luscious. I definitely felt plump, but not fat. And I think it was an excessive amount of weight. But I just remember feeling like a totally different woman. I mean, I was like, wow, I'm never going to be that same person I was before I got pregnant. My body will never be that way again. Not physically, not emotionally, everything. So I just really, again, to the whole pregnancy thing, I just feel like it was, I mean, I hate to be so cliche, but it felt like it was just so magical, because it was as smooth. And again, seeing a lot of my friends have babies, and some of them have really hard pregnancies, I feel like that I had a really easy, uneventful, and I felt good pregnancy. And the first one, you know, I always did get pregnant a second time, and it's crazy how different in my sisters and I always talk about this. It's crazy how different every woman's birth, pregnancy to birth story is, even from child to child. Like, trying to predict when a woman goes into labor, when that baby's going to come, is pointless, because it's like, unless it's a scheduled C-section, I labored for almost 18 hours. My sister labored for like 3.5 hours. And so I didn't even make it to the hospital in time to see him born. So and then her first though was like almost 18 hours. So every woman's pregnancy from child to child is so different. And that amazes me that I think your body is just doing exactly what needs to be done for that specific human. It's just really nuts. So, yeah, so I just kind of felt my body was not going to be the same. And it was a vessel. It was built to do this, to grow this baby. And then it was built to nourish the baby. I mean, being a sole breastfed baby is a lot of work. I mean, to be the only person that can nurture this baby and soothe the baby is a lot, especially when you're postpartum and you're exhausted. It's a lot. And pumping, of course, is great because you can put some milk for people to help. But again, a struggle is, do I pump now and then my baby's going to eat in 20 minutes and I'm not going to have enough? Do I pump now and, you know, and then use it next, or do I freeze it, or what do I do with it? And so it's the hardest mental game, breastfeeding. And it only became harder with my second pregnancy, but with my first, just because, again, it was my first time, it was like a full-time job. And then that whole feeling like you're the only one that can soothe that infant in the first few weeks of its life, and everybody's like, oh, she's sad, and then give it back to you. And you're like, really, I just want to just sit here. But that was, you know, that was really demanding, but I loved breastfeeding. Loved breastfeeding. I just, you know, after the challenges, it was just so much fun. Especially when she grows up and she starts looking at you and grabbing your face and holding you, and you know, and then you have that bond in the middle of the night when you finally do catch up on sleep. When you have that bond in the middle of the night when they get up and they're crying and all you have to do is just go in there and hold them and breastfeed them and they're done again. There's my husband. That's Chase.
Hi. Nice to meet you. Nice to meet you. We love your home and all your dead animals.
They were awesome.
They were tasty.
They're gorgeous specimens. They really are.
Yeah, they were tasty. A lot of meat. So you're going to go to the store?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
I found one of the things that was like jarring to me was, like you're saying, this, like how you were like solely responsible, even though they had the support network, you know? And there were times where I was like, I felt like I had to ask permission to go to the bathroom. Like, mm-hmm. Could you hold my child while I go to the bathroom? Can you hold my child while I take a shower? And like the whole time you can hear them crying, you know? And that like, that pressure of like being the one, I can totally relate to that.
Yes. You know, prior to me having kids, I was, my sister and I always joke, we were the best mom before we had kids. People always said, you're going to be a great mom. I nannied, I babysat, I nannied in Paris, I nannied in Hawaii. I mean, I nannied and babysat my whole life. And people are always like, you're going to make the best mom. And, you know, of course, I look at these moms that I'm nannying for, and they're asking me to come over and sit with their child so they can sleep. And I'm like thinking, wow, you guys are like, what? This is really a hard job. Why do you have to sleep? I would kick myself now if I could have that kind of person to come into my house at that time and hold my baby when all I wanted to do was sleep. Because when you have that baby and you're the person that gets the crying baby when he's sad or she's sad, and you're the baby that's ultimately responsible, and you're the one that has to get up at 2 a.m., at 4 a.m. and in the evening, you're like, okay, what schedule do I do tonight so I have a good evening? And you're trying to play out your whole night. It's exhausting. It's exhausting. And, you know, and I think all of my friends that experience that same, mostly with the first child, because by the second you're exhausted, it's not a new thing. By the second baby or two babies, you're exhausted. And so you're kind of already ahead of the game. But with all those first time moms, I look at them and I'm like, I know what 9 and 10 p.m. look like. I mean, it's not fun because you're looking at the rest of the night, staring it in the face, and you know that your whole support system has physically left. Your husband more than likely, like in my case, had to go to work. So I'm not, and my husband is in a very dangerous line of work. And I'm not going to get him up and send him off to work tired where he has to be working with high voltage electricity. I'm just, so I'm in the living room with the baby and he's sleeping. And so it was definitely a battle the first few months. But fast forward, you know, 3 months or so when they get the hang of breastfeeding, and I got comfortable with the baby sleeping in the other room. They were out of our room and I was comfortable going in there and feeding her and coming out, you know, then breastfeeding and nurturing just snowballed into the funnest, craziest experience. Just that connection and knowing how your body produces the exact formula that's needed for the baby and their nutrition at that time is just so cool. You know, and to see my breast milk in the refrigerator and the freezer and all the different layers of fats, and it was just all fun for me. The breastfeeding, and then you know, that baby starts eating solids, and that was kind of a relief, because then now you're not the sole provider for the nutrition. And I'm thinking, thank goodness, you know, now I can be like, here, Chase, you take her and feed her dinner. Let me take a shower. And I always call it a full shower now. And the full shower means I'm going to shave and wash my hair. So I always will give him a baby. I would give him a baby and be like, I still say it to this day. I'm going to give you this child because I'm going to take a full shower. And that was a fun release to have. But I did pump. I pumped and I always had a few bottles. My parents the first overnight my oldest had, she was 3 weeks old. And my parents always asked that they could have them at the earliest time we were comfortable, because the baby then could be very used to their house. And I always really felt it was good for the baby to be comforted by someone other than me. So my babies always, from the first month of their life, spent the night at mostly my parents' house when we were in Tucson. But my sisters took the babies once in a while, and so they got a different feel for different comfort zones. And so I always had a bottle for someone in those first few months when it was really challenging. I could really take a break.
That's great.
Yeah.
Can you kind of like fast forward to the gap between the, you know, solid food phase and then the being pregnant again phase?
Oh my gosh. Well, here's a funny story. I don't know if you've ever heard of the Catholic contraceptive. They say breastfeeding was apparently a Catholic contraceptive. No, it's not. It's on your pen. And I knew it wasn't, but it's a joke, you know, that when you're breastfeeding, you can't get pregnant. You can. Because I got pregnant when my daughter was 11 months old. And so on her year birthday, I made just shredded beef tacos for her birthday, one of my favorite meals. And I ate it, and I just remember feeling the feeling of the nauseous, like definitely nobody else was sick. And I'm like, I know exactly what this is. And sure enough, I was 3 weeks away from graduating with my master's, and my daughter just turned one. I was just about to wean her. I was just about to have this kind of like freedom of a summer. And I knew it. I mean, I was just like, I'm definitely pregnant. So she was only 11 months old when I got pregnant, because I started feeling nauseous at 12 months. At her year birthday, and I called my doctor and I said, I cannot even give you an estimate of how pregnant I am because I have not had my period. Now, all I know is that I started feeling like this at about 4 to 6 weeks with my first pregnancy. So I can maybe guess that I'm about 4 to 6 weeks. And she goes, well, let's give it a couple weeks and you can come in for your first ultrasound. So I went through my finals and my graduation ceremony and everything, and I knew I was pregnant, and I was exhausted, as I was with my first pregnancy. You know, just your body is just multiplying these cells at a drastic number. So I was tired, chasing after my one-year-old. And so this whole nother wave of exhaustion comes. And after I'd finally caught up from birth exhaustion, and I went to my first appointment, and as my husband jokes in the room, what if it's twins? And I'm like, I would probably punch you. The nurse practitioner comes in, who I adore. She's just an older woman, and I really loved her. And, you know, you see the nurse practitioner pretty much always more than the doctor. So I really loved her. She feels my belly, and she goes for a belly ultrasound. And so she goes across my belly, and she goes, huh, there's twins. And I just cried. I cried so hard. I froze, I cried, and I said, why didn't you do an internal one? She goes, well, when you said you were about 4 to 6 weeks and now we're thinking you're 8 weeks, she was like, your uterus felt way too high to be 4 to 6 or 6 to 8 weeks. She's like, I either felt that you were further along or this was the case. And so she's like, and sure enough, this was the case. So you are right, you are 6 to 8 weeks, 8 weeks closer, but you're 8 weeks with twins, so everything's much bigger. And I cried so hard. And Chase was there, and he was, like, smiling from ear to ear. He thought it was the coolest thing in the world. And my mom had my one-year-old. She watched her so we could go to this appointment. So I get in the car, and the first person I call is my little sister. the NICU nurse, and I told her, and she totally thought I was joking. She was like, no way, you're totally joking. And I just start crying so hard. She's like, you're not joking. I'm like, no, I'm not joking. And I get home, and I just hold the ultrasound up to my mom. And my mom is very medical. She's a nurse. She's seen many ultrasounds. It didn't even occur to her. I don't even think. It was so far off our radar that it didn't even occur to her. And a twin ultrasound at the beginning is very similar to one, except you see two of those little dots. But if you're not versed in the ultrasound world, it could just look like more schmagma in your uterus. You know, it could just be anything. But if you, like, tell them what it is, you're like, no, that's definitely two embryos. So I just hold it up to my mom, and she's like, oh, that's great, good. I'm like, no, two, mom, two. And I just start crying, and my mom starts crying because she knows exactly what I'm in store for. And so she's crying, I'm crying. Chase is smiling, and I think I cried. Honestly, I probably cried for at least a day, if not 2 days, on and off, I cried. It didn't help, of course, that I'm hormonal. And every time I kind of told somebody, I cried again. And then with a little bit of research and talking to some family members, we discovered that my great-grandmother had, I think, I could this could be wrong, but in the early 1900s, I think she had three sets of twins in her, she had a total of 17 children, but I think she had three sets of twins. Now, in the early 1900s, of course, twins don't survive. I mean, there's this a very risky thing. So I'm pretty sure, okay, actually, now I think about it, maybe two sets. But neither set survived. One didn't pass birth, and one didn't pass, like, the winter. But she had at least two sets of twins in a family of 17 children. So that was my great-grandmother on my grandfather's side, on my dad's side, paternal. So when I do a lot of, again, I guess I did some research on this, but not, like, not blogs on Google. I was doing some scientific research about the genetic pass down of twins. And so it went from my great-grandmother to my grandfather to my dad, of course. So my dad passed the twin genetic to all of his daughters. So clearly the man, we couldn't have been twins, my siblings, because the man can't determine if you're going to have twins because they just release a million sperm. So it's the woman on how many eggs she releases. And so he passed the twin genetic to my sisters and I. And so I had the twin genetic in my genes. And so I released two eggs. And it just happened to be that month I released two eggs while I'm breastfeeding. And so they were fraternal twins. And they knew that from the beginning. They could see two sacs and everything. And that pregnancy was, like I said, so different from the first. I mean, double everything. Double exhaustion, double hormones, double calories. I mean, I had to eat so much. And I wasn't even done. I hadn't weaned my first. So for the first 2 months, I'm growing the twins. I'm also weaning my 1-year-old. So she's clearly eating a lot of solids. So she's not getting no complete nutrition, but I'm still producing milk. And so I was consuming peanut butter, avocados, milkshakes. I mean, I was eating the heaviest fat food for the first few months, just trying to get myself to gain so many calories. And I actually ended up losing some weight, which was a little concerning at the beginning. But the doctor just asked that I increase and a lot of my fats. And so I did. And everybody was just bringing me all kinds of fatty foods. And it was fun because, you know, that's kind of the fun part about being pregnant. They say then you can eat whatever you want, which I did not do in my first because I was afraid of gaining too much weight. So I still ate healthy with my first, but this one it was like, no, you have to consume a lot of calories. So I continued to go to the doctor. Now, twins is high risk from the get-go. So high risk pregnancies, they treat differently than a normal pregnancy. You have to go to the doctor pretty much twice as much. But on the plus side, you get an ultrasound with twins every time because it's easier to find the heartbeats. So every time I went to the doctor, I got an ultrasound. So that was fun. And then also, my husband was really proud to remind me that we were not going to find the sex out of the baby that I had promised him from the first. And I argued that for a few days. I said, what about one? Just one. Come on. There's two in there. And he was like, no, no. And after we argued it pretty much to the point where we could find out, about, you know, 20 weeks, 19 weeks. He won, naturally. And then it just became kind of a back burner thing. Like, it wasn't even a concern in my head because my focus was on just growing these babies while still attending to my one-year-old. And so it was like a fun kind of discussion for a few months, and then it was like just null and void. I just forgot about it, really, that I didn't know what was growing. So we did not find the sex out of those babies, but we did go to an ultrasound pretty much every other week at the beginning. I had to go about every other week. Sometimes she let me go 3 weeks. And then, again, through that pregnancy, knock on wood, I was, you know, my body was really healthy. The babies were really healthy. And I felt much bigger. I felt much bigger. And now, I've always heard that on your second pregnancies and afters, your body just knows what to do, so it expands much faster. And that was so true. I mean, my body just like opened up. And I don't know if it knew it had two in there, but at one point in July, so I was maybe like 14, 15 weeks pregnant, I think there's a chemical released into your body that opens your hips or your pelvic and gets it ready to hold the babies or baby. And mine just maybe went too much or something, but it pinched nerve in my lower back and I was out. Was out. I fell to the ground. Thank goodness my husband was home that day. I was not even numb. It was more pain than I had ever experienced, even in that first birthing labor. I couldn't move. Like, I couldn't pivot. I mean, it was my central back, so I couldn't pivot shoulders. My head, I couldn't. I was on the ground. I somehow, over the course of the next 12 hours, was able to get myself worked up onto the couch. My husband had to help me inch by inch. They came and took my daughter. She was really being kind of traumatized, seeing me in pain. So someone came and took her. But over the next 12 hours, my husband helped me inch my waist to the couch and on the couch. And the next day, I laid on the couch. We tried a few things. My mom had some friends that are into like energies and oils. And they came and like did their energy work and their oil work on my back. You know, and you can only take Tylenol when you're pregnant. So, you know, I took my Tylenol and that's it. And then that night, in my husband's line of work, he got called out to work on down power lines because it was a monsoon. He got called out. So I am at my house by myself, and he got called out. And I, have you ever seen the movie Misery? And you know that woman's pulling herself across the floor? That was me. In the middle of the night, I had to go to the bathroom. In hindsight, I should have just gone on the ground. But I had to pull myself into the bathroom, and I went to the bathroom. I almost fainted from pain. Got myself back into the living room. My husband came home the next morning and I was on the floor. And he was like, that's it, you're going to the hospital. So we had to call 911 and the ambulance, and the fire truck came and put me in an ambulance, and we went to the ER. And I had to actually I called my doctor, and I had to end up getting a shot of morphine. And morphine is just, you know, muscle relaxer. So I was relaxed. You know, most of my pain was because I was tense. I was relaxed, but I still had very isolated nerve pain. So again, when my body opened up, I think a nerve pinched. And I have yet to really figure out exactly what happened, but all I know is it was painful. The morphine relaxed me. And then over the course of the next 2 weeks, I went 3 times a week to acupuncture. And I found someone that knew the trigger points, of course, of labor and being pregnant. So she worked on like these cross lines. So she didn't put anything in my midsection. She put them on my wrist and my ankles that were all kind of crossing my midlines. And within a week, it was much better. And the following week, I was even able to drive myself. But that was horrible. I mean, it was traumatizing for Lainey to see me hurt, my oldest. And it was just really that kind of started a pattern of events through this pregnancy that really did disable me. I mean, just put a wall up to me being able to do anything. So it was from that, then it was my belly. I mean, then it was just like trying to cram all these organs up here. And then the two babies down there is just, I mean, these women that have more than two babies, that have triplets and four, are just, I mean, it's just amazing where everything goes. And you feel it. I mean, you feel things everywhere. And so I was just uncomfortable forever. I was uncomfortable forever. And so, again, not finding out the sex of the baby was not a huge thing because I just was so uncomfortable. And that was, and you know, and but trying to stay positive for my daughter and still trying to have play dates with her and keep up with her and stay positive for my husband and everything. I mean, it was a lot to handle. And then as the summer grew and we went into the fall, it just became more and more obvious that I was not, it was going to be very challenging for me. My due date was the end of December. And of course, they say twins pretty much mature by 37, 38 weeks because they know they've got to get out of there soon. They're running out of space. So they say that they pretty much, they in the last few weeks, they'll grow faster. Their lungs will develop faster. So I had a feeling that I was going to go towards the, you know, I would hopefully carry towards the end of November, beginning of December. So I pushed through the best I could through the summer, and then the fall came. And I developed this horrible allergy cough. Like, I don't know. And again, you can't take anything. So it was like, it was a cold, and then it turned into more than a cold and this horrible chronic cough. And it was like a cough that happened anytime I kind of like took any kind of deep breath or laughed a little, it would just domino into this chronic coughing spell. And so through September and October, I just was in this horrible coughing spell. And I also was then required to start doing NSTs, non-stress tests. A lot of high-risk pregnancies, you have to do non-stress tests just to make sure the babies aren't stressed in their environment. And so they were requiring me to do two non-stress tests a week, plus a regular doctor's visits. So I started those in September, and I'd have to go check myself into triage, and they would find the twins, two different heartbeats, and I'd have to sit there, and for 20 minutes they'd have to stay non-stressed. Their heartbeats would have to not dip or go high or anything. So to find two twins and hope they don't move for 20 minutes was a long process. I mean, sometimes I was in and out there in a half an hour, but sometimes it'd be like an hour. Now the coughing thing that I'm talking about was moving them all over the place. I mean, the pressure that I was coughing onto my cervix and then the twins going up and down. I mean, it was just, again, a domino effect thing. Event after event started happening. And then October came, and I was getting very uncomfortable and coughing still and still trying to walk and do things with my daughter. And I went to bed one night, and I was getting Braxton Hicks, and they were just strong. And I was in the shower, and I was like, this is just too much for me. So I woke my husband up at about midnight, and I was like, maybe even close to 11. And I said, I'm going to check myself in. I need to go just get checked. And so I didn't want to freak anybody out, my family, because like I said in the beginning, I have a huge support system. So had I called one sister, they would call the other, they'd call the mom, and before you know it, I'm going to have six individuals at the hospital with me. And I am so thankful for that. I am. But I didn't want to make people get out of bed at midnight for something that was probably just because I was going to Braxton Hicks. So I go check myself into triage, and sure enough, I'm dilated, which is fine. I mean, I'm dilated. I think I was like 2 centimeters or something. But she said, you're contracting, so we want to hydrate you and just monitor you overnight. Well, at least, you know, that's what the nurse said, the doctor said. So they pumped me like full 3 bags of IVs. I was the only woman in there, which was fantastic. So the nurse was great, pumping me full of fluids. And so then, of course, I do decide to call my family. And like I said, everyone starts calling me. I told everyone it will be fine. I'm just going to get hydrated. The doctor did ask, okay, so I was 31 weeks when this happened. So the doctor said, I'd like you to get the steroid shot for their lungs, just in case. And then that way, if they do come early, their lungs are going to be a little stronger. And again, that was 31 weeks. And so I had to get the steroid shot before I left. Oh, and the doctor said, you're on bed rest. So go home and lay down and don't get up again. And so I reluctantly told my mom and my sisters that the doctor put me on bed rest because I knew they would make me stick to it. And I got the steroid shot, and then the next day was Halloween. And I went back for my second steroid shot, went home, went to bed, laid on the couch. And I tried a few times to do things like drive to the store to get coffee, and I got yelled at so much by my mom and my sisters. They were like, nope, bed rest means no driving. So now I have my 1-year-old and 3 appointments a week to the doctor, and I'm not allowed to drive or pick up my 1-year-old. And that was the 31 weeks. So for the next 5 weeks, I'm on bed rest and going to 3 appointments a week. Everyone in my family is just rallying to like take my daughter once or twice a week, come pick me up and drive me to the doctor. And again, the non-stress tests are very unpredictable as to the time. I can be there half an hour, I could be there 2 hours. And so it was definitely a village effort to take care of me for 5 weeks and still continuing to pump me full of calories. So it was challenging. Bed rest is hard. It's hard. But once I realized the risks, again, having a sister that cares for preemies, once I understood the risks and also knowing what I knew from my first when I had experienced how much work she is when she comes out versus being in my belly, when you're on bed rest, you have time to think about all this. I was like, no, it's not worth it. It's way easier to keep these babies in my belly than out for everybody. And the last thing I wanted was to go to the hospital and go home without my babies. It would just be a nightmare. So I really stuck to bed rest. By Thanksgiving, I was pretty much in tears half the day because I was so uncomfortable. My poor family was really rallying together to help me get comfortable. They were making me beds around the house that I could lay on, trying in different positions. And I just remember looking at my brother-in-law and he was like, I'll do anything to make you happy. And I was like, there's nothing, nobody can do this. I'm so big. Sitting up, I can't breathe. Laying down, I can't breathe. Laying on my side, my sides go numb. I mean, it was very uncomfortable. And so, so Thanksgiving that year was on 22nd, I think, the November 22nd, a Thursday. And my birthday is May 26th. My husband is February 26th. And my daughter came April 26th. That Monday was going to be the 26th. It was going to be the Monday my doctor came off vacation. And it was going to be the Monday that I reached 36 weeks. And that was my goal, was 36 weeks. So I was like, this is it on Thanksgiving. I'm like, the babies are coming next Monday. They have to come. So I willed them and thought. And Monday I was signed up to go to another NST. And my younger sister was the one in charge of taking me. And she was rooting for me to have the babies also that day. So she goes, we're going to go get a pedicure. And I'm not dropping you off at the door. I'm parking back here and you're walking. So she parks in the back of the parking lot. We walk in. I get a pedicure. I'm telling the guy, I'm like, get these babies going. Get something moving. He's pushing my legs and he's doing things, you know, who knows. But sure enough, I'm sitting there and I'm looking at the clock and I'm feeling different. And so my sister is like, you are like definitely concentrating. And I'm like, I know, because I'm like willing them out of me. So we go to my NST. Now Monday after a holiday is a very popular day for people to schedule inductions and C-sections because they usually want to do the holidays and then come and have the babies. So I go into a waiting room full of people. Now being an NST, you're pushed back, which is fine because there's women there that need to be seen. So I'm getting pushed back and I'm okay with that. And I know all the nurses now because I've been going for 3 months twice a week and my sister's pretty much always going with me. And so I'm kind of waiting patiently, but I'm focusing. And my sister's like, I'm not having it. We're getting you in there. She goes back to the triage room. She goes to one of the nurses we know and she goes, things are happening. She goes, get her in here. So we go in there and the nurse checks and she's like, you're 6 centimeters. You're ready. And I was like, thank God. So, you know, so I'm just so happy we make all the phone calls. You know, I've got Lainey for her overnight scheduled, so she gets shipped off. My husband comes. Everybody comes. They get me all strapped up. Now, with twins, you automatically deliver in an OR because the risk of a C-section. And with my first pregnancy, I shared my dad, my sisters, everybody was in the room. I think we might have broke the head count rule a little bit, but we kind of just acted like, I don't know, everybody was just kind of coming and going, and the nurse was really nice about it. But with this one, I was happy. I was happy that it was just going to be Chase and I, because there was no question about it. Nobody else could go with us in the OR. There wasn't room for anyone else. So everyone joined me in the pre-operating room, I guess you'd call it, which was really the delivery room. everyone joined me in there, and, you know, everyone was happy, and I was so happy. And again, I wasn't even going to try to go unmedicated, clearly, because this was possibly going to be a C-section, which I was not really wanting. I really, really didn't want to also have one vaginally in the second flip and do a C-section. And I've had that talk with my doctor numerous times. Now, my doctor, who was on call for my first pregnancy, she came in for this pregnancy because we'd formed this relationship and it was twins. She herself is a twin, so she always says she's always rooting for the second baby because she was the second baby. So she's always ready to get all of them out healthy. And so she wanted to, you know, and we had had that talk so many times, how I wanted them vaginally as much as I did. And she said, her response to me all the time was, my job, our healthy babies, healthy mama, and I will do my best. So we're getting all scrubbed up for the OR room, and the doctor comes, and she's having a good time. And I'm getting prepped for my anesthesia. And am I saying that right? What is it? Epidural. Yes, I blanked on that word. So I'm getting prepped for the epidural, and I'm feeling really good, and contractions are coming, and my siblings and my mom, they're all in there. And then Chase gets all suited up for OR, and they go through that long list of questions, you know, before you have your baby. Oh my gosh, when the nurse comes in there and the computer, felt like forever. And the epidural hadn't really kicked in, so I'm contracting and concentrating at the same time and still feeling good. But by the time they get through those questions, they check and they're like, you're ready to go, you're 9 centimeters, let's go to the OR. And I was like, this is amazing, this is the best birth. So we get wheeled into the OR, and I think I was in the OR for like a total of 20 minutes. So they wheel me in, and I just, there, everyone's ready. You know, they have two sets of baby nurses. They have two mama nurses. They have my doctor, my husband. I'm all there, and it's a hideous room. I mean, it's ugly, but it's so fun. And so they get me all suited up, and I'm ready to push. And so I push, and I had a girl, because I didn't know that yet. So I think with the girl, she was first. I pushed maybe 20 minutes. I was in there. 3 rounds of contraction, so maybe 6 or 8 minutes. I pushed, and the girl came out, and I was like, what is it? And they're like, it's a girl. Now, in my gut, I felt like I was having a girl and a boy. Statistically, that's like the most likely to happen with fraternal twins. So they held up and they're like, a girl. The last thing I wanted was all girls. So I panicked right then. They're like, it's a girl. And I'm like, that's it. There's 2 girls in there. I know it. I'm screwed. There's 2 girls. They take her off, and I hear them saying the Apgar score, which is always fun to hear, that I'm actually hearing it too between my contractions. And so she's all registering great. They're, you know, I see them looking at them. I'm watching her while I'm about to go through another contraction. And when I look down, I have 2 amazing nurses, and their hands are just all up on my spare space in my belly. They're just pushing down so this baby does not turn. And I feel my doctor's hand literally in my vagina holding the next baby's head. And I was like, just get the next baby out of my vagina. She's like, well then focus. So I'm ready to contract, and I push, and she's like, it's not quite, you got to do this again. So I had to wait, and then the next round of contractions, I push, and he comes out. It was a boy. And they forget to tell us right away, because I'm just ecstatic that he came out and he didn't flip. And so they took him away, and then I was like, wait, what is it? And then my husband goes over there, and he had a lower Apgar score. His color was a little bluer, but nothing they were concerned about. It was probably because he was second in line and he had a little bit longer in there. So they were kind of washing him up and cleaning him off. But my husband went over and was like, it's a boy. And so it was so exciting because it's exactly what we wanted. And everybody was waiting and out in the waiting room. And so she, I didn't tear or anything. They came out, I guess, I don't know if they came out fast, because I would think if they came out fast, you would tear, but maybe my body was just used from the first pregnancy. The little girl, Elsie, came out first. She was 5 pounds, 11 ounces, and then Wade came out second, and he was 6 pounds, 1 ounce. So, I mean, single babies weigh about 6 pounds, and so they were pretty good size, but And Wade, he's bigger, he's broader, he's a bigger head. So I think she just really, she was much more petite. So I think she really just kind of opened everything up. And then he was, had he come first, I probably would have torn. But I think she just really opened things up and he was just coming out quickly. But they, you know, afterwards, while she's cleaning me up and checking me out and making sure afterbirth comes out and everything, I see him working on the twins. Now, the hospital I delivered at, they're not equipped for preemies. They were actually just starting to work on getting younger than, like, 36ers, which is what my twins were. They actually, I don't think, would have even taken them had I been 35 weeks. They may have, but for sure at 34 weeks, I would have been shipped to another hospital. So I think they were being extra cautious, especially because my sister is a NICU nurse at a, I don't know if you'd call it a level 4 hospital, one that does work with super preemies or what they call micro preemies. So she was telling me that she feels like they were being extra precautious because they're trying to earn credentials to be a hospital that can support younger preemies. So she said they were doing things that at her hospital they would be like, oh, that's nothing. But they were being very diligent, and which is fine by me. I mean, I was like, you take all the time you need. I was really anxious to get them on my chest. And that was one kind of sad thing post-labor that was really hard for me, is I didn't get them right on my chest. You know, I got them both for, under a minute, in my face for a minute, so I could, like, just kiss them and smell them and talk to them. But then they whisked them away into their little bassinets, and I could see them, but it was just a bummer they weren't on my chest. And so I was really just proud that they were there and healthy, so I wasn't, and I'm not one to question, I guess, you know, authority or doctors. And so unless I really feel like I'm being neglected or anything, or if I'm really concerned. But I wasn't concerned. They were being taken care of. I just really wanted them on my chest. So I didn't ask. And I don't know how long time passed, but I think maybe about 10, 15 minutes passed. And then they were like, okay, well, they want to take them to the nursery, they call it, because it's not, again, it's not a level 4. It's not a NICU. They want to take them to the nursery and check them out. And I kind of was confused, but I didn't ask. So they took them to the nursery, but I was like, can my husband go? And they're like, of course. So he went to the nursery. And I was wheeling down the hall, and I saw my sisters and my mom. And they're like, what is that? And I'm like, you guys haven't heard? And I felt like this was like 20 minutes after the babies were born. They're like, no. So I got to share the news with everybody that it was a boy and a girl, and they were ecstatic. And they're like, well, where are they? And I told them. And then now my sisters and my mom are ones to question. I mean, they're ones to be like, give me the facts. Why? So my mom's like, well, what's going on? Cass, go find out what's going on. So she sent my sister to go ask the other nurses. So funny enough, one of the other nurses working there is per diem at my sister's hospital. So she kind of had the in, so she was talking to the other nurse, and the nurse said, you know what, they just are being very cautious. They're just going to listen to them and make sure that, check their blood levels. And my sister's like, they're 36 weeks, they're so healthy. And the other nurse is like, I know, but they just got to follow this. And so the LZ had a little bit of a low blood sugar, so they brought her to me first so I could feed her. So I finally was able to get a baby on the boob. So that was great. So I got her on the boob right away and started feeding her to get her blood count up. I mean, her blood sugar.
Did she take right away?
She did, yeah. I was so lucky in that. Even in my first, you know, like when I was the lactation specialist, came in with the first baby. Even though I was saying in the first how awkward it is to sit and everything, I never got bloody nipples. I never got scabbing. You know, I did get mastitis with the first. Mastitis is when you get the clogged milk duct, and then it's an infection, and it killed women early on. I mean, this thing, it's a rapid growing infection. But now, of course, and nowadays, if you catch it within the first few days, you get an antibiotic, which is safe to take while you're breastfeeding. So I did get mastitis with the first, and I got on it, being, again, from a family of many nurses, they knew what was going on, so I just had to call my doctor, and I got on an antibiotic. And with the twins, again, Elsie just latched very easily and ate. And then the most difficult part, though, was managing two. I mean, in my head, I'm like, I have two boobs, I have two babies. This is natural. No, it's not natural. It's so uncomfortable. They knew what to do. You know, they're suckling. They're getting it. But it was just, it was, the first night was hard trying to, and then in my head, they're also telling me how her blood sugar was low. She didn't wake up to eat all night the first night. And I remember being like, this is not normal. She needs to eat. And I was rattling her and shaking her and trying to feed her, and she just never got up to eat. And I asked the nurse, and she said, you know, she's just went through a huge traumatic event. Like, she's tired. Let her, you know, we'll see if she eats in a little bit. And I was concerned about that. But that kept me up all night. That was just the beginning of many sleepless nights. So I didn't sleep that night, and the twins, you know, my husband was in the room with me. The babies were with me. So they got out of the nursery. So both babies got to come with me into the room. And they were on and off the boob. They were being held by my sisters and my dad and my mom and everybody that was there. But she, the first night, my husband, I would say, slept like a champ on the couch when I was trying to, like, figure out what to do with these two babies. I think I had one in my arm and one between my legs. And the nurse would come in and be like, you know, you have to have these babies in the bassinets. And I was like, no, I'll put them in. I'm not going to sleep yet. No, I just kept one in my arm and one between my legs. And I didn't sleep. And they're just sitting there. And kind of at one point, the little boy, Wade, I was like, why isn't he moving? He's very still. And I was panicked, and so I undressed him and everything. And then he started, like, grunting. And then he pooped, and I was like, thank goodness. Like, this is one of the things I can check off to get out of here sooner. So the first night was hard. I was up all night. Excuse me. The second day came, and they actually did tell me that I was probably going to stay two nights with the twins, being a little bit that they were early and twins and high risk. So I was like, okay, well, I want Lainey to meet the baby. So Lainey got to come the next day, and I just burst into tears because now she's my big girl. She was my baby, and now she's this 19 months. So it was 19 months between the two of them. And now she's my big girl, and I was just crying because it just wasn't her and I. We had this awesome, like, we just had this awesome routine together from the morning when she got up to lunch to nap to our outings. And I was like, that's all done now. That was our time. And now we have to share it with these two little humans. So I was emotional, to say the least. And Lainey was really cute with them. And everything was really going well. And they pooped and they were eating. And, you know, and I was moving around and I had done all my things on the checklist. So the second night, my husband, I really felt bad leaving our daughter two nights in a row. So I was like, how you go sleep with Lainey at the house? So one of us is with her. And my mom said she would sleep with me at the hospital. So my mom slept with me at the hospital, and she was, you know, a little bit more attentive, I should say, than my husband. So she was taking one baby and sitting with the baby in the chair, or sleeping in the chair. And the nurse was a little uneasy about that. But I was like, leave them alone. They're sleeping. So they were sleeping, and I would have baby, and the whole night was the same. I mean, I wasn't really sleeping very much because I was worried about them eating. But then the next day came, and the hospital said they had to pass a car seat test. And my sister, again, coming from kind of a higher level hospital, was like, well, yeah, we do that, but I'm really small babies. Like, so babies that are born before 37 weeks sometimes forget in their head they haven't quite formed the connection to continue to breathe while they're either A, eating, or B, sleeping. So younger babies sometimes, again, they'll go into these apnea spells where they forget to breathe because they're in such a deep sleep, or they'll forget to breathe because they're eating and they'll still forget to stop and breathe. So that was a valid concern of the nurses, and they said, well, in the car seat, that apnea will, you know, they'll sink and get into this position and their heart rate will drop. So they had to pass a car seat test. And they said they just had to sit in the car seat for an hour. It's crazy. It was the craziest thing, an hour. They had to sit in their car seats, hooked up to a heart monitor, pulse ox, to make sure that their heartbeats didn't drop or they, whatever. And I remember packing up the room, and my mom was there, and everybody had been discharged. And my mom was going back and forth checking. I think I went in and took a picture of him, and everything seemed fine. And then my mom came back, and she was like, Elsie failed the car seat test. And I was like, what does that mean? She goes, she has to stay here. And I lost it. I lost it. Seriously started crying right then. And I don't think I finished crying for 72 hours. And I, and then they, so they said, since one of them failed, they'll keep the other one. Which, in hindsight, was better than to have an infant at home and an infant in the nursery. And I'll get to that point in a second. But I looked at my doctor and I said, undischarge me. What do you need me to tell you? That I didn't poop? That I still can't feel my toes? What do I need to tell you? Keep me in this hospital. And she was like, I can't. Insurance will not let you. You've already been discharged. You have to leave. And so the nurses were fantastic. They let me stay till the last minute that I could at that hospital. I think it was like 10 p.m. And I was so sad leaving the hospital. And I was exhausted. I was sad. And I was just like, how am I going to go home and sleep and leave these babies in the hospital? It's my job to take them home. And I went into that nursery and I just cried and I cried. And I'm like pumping and pumping. And that's not helpful to try to pump or feed babies while you're crying. So nothing's coming out of me. And as I'm feeding Wade, he slips into an apnea spell. So they're like, 5 days. He has to be here for 5 days. And I'm like, okay. So I don't want to leave. I'm like pretty much staying in this rocking chair they've put me in. And then my husband's like, you got to go home. And the nurses are like, just think about us as like really highly qualified babysitters. And go home and sleep. And I was like, no, I'm not going to sleep at all. And Chase is like, well, it's something that's going to help me sleep. And I was like, I need Lainey. I need my oldest. I need her to come to bed with me. So Chase went and got me Chick-fil-A at 10 o'clock at night or something. And I went home and he moved Lainey to my bedroom and her and I slept together that night. And I did sleep, but it was hard. It was hard. And I was up, of course, at like 6 o'clock and we couldn't go check on the babies till 7. So the next morning I go to the hospital and this is all new to me. I have no idea. Like the system that goes down, I don't know what it means for babies to be in the nursery. So I'm trying to learn. And I don't know if it's because my sister, they knew my sister was a NICU nurse and my mom was a nurse, but I think maybe they thought that I knew more than I did. So I didn't feel like I was getting answers. And I wasn't asking questions, in my defense. But I don't feel like they should have just expected me to know some of the things. And so and I was probably hormonal and sensitive. But I felt like some of the nurses were being a little bit cold. And I was like, I don't want to experience this. So I did tell, there was a director that I knew. I had worked with her son in my past career. So I called her and I said, you know, I just don't feel comfortable. Some of these nurses are not making me feel welcomed or, what am I trying to, they're not making me feel adequate. Like they're just not giving me the tools I think I need. And so the next time I came, so she's like, okay, and this is after a whole day being there. She's like, okay, you need to go eat lunch. You need to go home, take a shower, and then you come back this evening. So when I came back that evening, the twins were set up in their own room. And I had the most wonderful nurse. And so she sat with me and got me a rocking chair and a seat cushion. And it was this, okay, so they were born November 26th. So this is November 29th-ish. So it's close to Christmas. And so they're decorating for Christmas. And I love the Christmas season. And I love Christmas music. So she was like, how about we turn on some Christmas music? And so we turn on Christmas music. And we just sang to the twins. And I fed them on and off. And I also came to the realization that night that I was going to have to start giving them formula, which is a really hard thing for me. Then. It was then. To accept that I was going to have to give them formula. But this nurse made it so logical that this is like adequate. This is babies need this nutrition, and it's not your fault you can't make it right now or make enough for the both of them. But you need to get caught up on your health, and your body needs to get ready to start producing this milk. So I had to accept at that time that they were going to start getting formula. And that was probably a hard thing for me. And I'll get to it later, but that was probably a hard thing for me for months. But let me tell you this, the moment I passed that hurdle, it was like, formula is formula, it's fine, I'm doing as much as I can breastfeeding, was the moment I was like free of a lot of chains that I had put on myself when it came to breastfeeding and formula with the twins. But so they were in the nursery. That was like the first 24 hours after I had to leave them. And I was a mess. And then when I would be at home, my husband posted this picture of me. And we had done this room addition in my house. It was all under construction. And we were in a hurry to get it done before the twins came, so we had more space. And it was very dusty. And so I knew the twins were coming home. So I was like in this crazy manic mood to like clean the whole house. So my husband has this picture of me. I still have my hospital bracelets on. And I'm in a tank top. And I'm outside the window washing it. And I look like a ghost. And he puts it on Facebook, you know, and he's sweet. I mean, his intentions were great. But he was like, this woman just birthed two babies. And she's a badass cleaning the windows. And I look at the picture and I see a depressed, sad, malnourished, tired woman. And it's just, I mean, it's sad because I was like just trying to keep myself so busy. And I bet you if my mom was there or my sisters, they would have been like, they would have smacked me around and shoved me in my room. But I mean, I was just trying to keep myself so busy, getting myself to the point where I could realize what the next few days were going to. Again, I didn't know what the next few days were going to offer. I didn't know how to get to the hospital, how to come home and be with my daughter, how to get to the hospital, come home and be with my daughter, how to sleep, how to eat. My husband's vacation time ran out. So for the first 3 or 4 days that he was home, we kind of got a good system. I would get up at 7 a.m. I would go to the hospital first. I would stay at the hospital through lunch till about 4 because my daughter usually went down for a nap at 2. So Chase would do the morning activities with Lainey, put her down for a nap around 1 or 2. I would come home at 4 just in time for her to get up from a nap. We would be there together, and then he would go back to the hospital for the evening until 8. And then they actually, 7, because at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. they kick you out for an hour so they can do a nurse changeover. So he would go back for the later part of the night, and then he would stay as late as he wanted. And in that course of the next 3 days that they both were there, that really was, you know, a good system working for us. And I was pumping when I was home, and whatever I pumped, they would bring, and they would feed them my breast milk first and then just for the rest of the feedings formula. And now, again, going to why they were in the nursery, my sister was telling me that in her hospital, they would have already been home. Like, they were there purely to be monitored. Because they would just had the pulse ox on and the heart monitors on. They just want to make sure they didn't sleep into an apnea spell that they couldn't get out of. They never did that. They went into a couple apnea spells, but they always shook out of them. And again, my sister said that's because that's what they do at 36, 37 weeks. They go into a deep sleep. They stop sleeping, but they shake out of them. But you want to be safe than sorry. And I kept telling myself that. Better be safe than sorry. They're with caring people, and we've got this down. So their rule is after each apnea spell, they have to stay 5 days. And my sister said at her hospital, it's only 2 days. But here, they're just trying to earn these credentials, so it was 5 days. So remember, Wade had slipped into that apnea spell while I fed him. So he was there for 5 days. Elsie didn't go into a full apnea spell. In that car seat, it was just she just kind of failed it, so she was 3 days. So after 3 days, Elsie got to come home. And so she came home first, but then Wade went into another apnea spell. And so they added 5 more days on. And I was like, and then Chase had to go back to work. So having an infant at home and then having the infant at the hospital for 3 days, because there was 2 days over there, they overlapped, for having him at the hospital separate for 3 days was a nightmare. We tried to keep up the same, but I was like, it just doesn't make sense for me to not, to not, I don't know. Nothing made sense to me, to be honest. I don't know. No, there was no real answer of what we could do. So I stayed at home. I mean, we did the routine for a day or two. And then finally I was like, that's it. I'm sick of this. I'm sick of this. I don't want to go to the hospital anymore. I want him home. So my sister actually went with my husband to go pick up Wade when he was discharged because I just couldn't stand it anymore. I was like, I'm done. I'm sick of the hospital. I just want my babies here. Oh, and another kind of fun story is every Thanksgiving weekend, we go Christmas tree hunting. My whole family does. We go up to the White Mountains and we cut a Christmas tree down. Now, clearly I couldn't go because I was on bed rest and I was like, ready to explode. So everybody went and they got me a Christmas tree. Well, the week after Thanksgiving was the week they were in the nursery. It was crazy. Everyone was kind of crazy helping us with Lainey. So the night that both babies came home, or that Wade came home, my dad and my brother had already gotten the plan to bring my Christmas tree over. So that night, everyone came over. The babies were there, and they brought the Christmas tree. And they put the Christmas tree up, and they put the lights on, and everybody was home. And that was fantastic. I mean, that was just, like, completeness. I have some awesome pictures from that night, just all of us together. I look like death walking around the house. But I was just so happy everybody was home. And then that's when all the real work started. I mean, just having two infants at home. And a one-year-old was, to say the least, probably the biggest challenge anybody could be under. And somebody once was like, do you think it's going to be harder or easier that you already have one? And in my head, being an optimist that I am, easier because I know what to expect. You know, I've already been through it. I know I've been through that beginning first mom stuff. No, the hardest job about having my twins was my one-year-old. And I say that to everybody because she was at a sponge age. She wanted to learn everything. She needed my attention. She knew me. She needed Chase's attention. So after about 2 or 3 months of the twins being home and me figuring out that, it was like a light bulb went off and I was like, these twins just need nourishment. They just need to be held and loved. Yes, by me and Chase mostly, but really if they could just be held lovingly and fed, then, you know, they're going to do just fine. So I just... everybody in my village was just a huge help. Everyone took night shifts. I was too exhausted to figure out any kind of sleeping schedule. You know, I'd read about these moms that came up with these wonderful sleeping schedules where their 2-month-old twins were sleeping through the night. And I'm like, I don't have the energy to do that. I'm just going to wing it. And that's my personality too. I'm not a planner by any means. I'm a definitely go to day to day person. So none of the books with their suggestions was at all my personality. And so I just was like, we're just going to wing this. We're going to have swings. We're going to have boppies. We're going to have anything we have. And we're going to have family. And people just took twins. People would come over. I had a wonderful woman in my life who I nannied for. And it was like, let me give you money for a babysitter. Let me give you money so you can have someone that you were to meet. So she gave me some money. And she said, just put this in an envelope and find a babysitter. And so there was this one babysitter I kind of used with Lainey, but I never needed a babysitter because we just hung out all the time. And I have an enormous amount of family that would take Lainey. So I had this one babysitter and I was like, well, I'll give her a call. She ended up being a godsend. I mean, she ended up being just 100%. Reliable, dependable, completely confident with the twins, took charge. So she just came, and I remember being like, can you just come and stay the night at my house and do something with one of these twins? So that started a routine of her coming at least once a week. She would come, and she would be in the living room with one twin, and I'd be in the bedroom with another twin. And so that way I only had to get up with one. And again, I was still had that barrier with formula, but I was there. So she still did whatever I pumped she would use, but I was in the bedroom breastfeeding one twin, and she would be using formula in the living room with the other twin. And then I only had to wake up with one. So she would come once a week, and that was a huge relief. And then everyone in my family pitched in, you know, one maybe another night a week somebody would come. Or one time I remember my brother and his then girlfriend took the twins, both of them, for one night. That was pretty amazing. And they just, I mean, it was just a whirlwind the next few months. And I was just trying to figure out how to make everything work, the breastfeeding, the bottle feeding, the playing with my daughter. And I had many, many of breakdowns, many breakdowns. Now with my first baby, I feel like I got the baby blues postpartum. I did always see a light at the end of the tunnel. With the twins, there was never a light at the end of the tunnel. There was never a light. I just continued to get more and more in this deep hole. And me saying how I felt like they just needed to be loved by other people kind of got to an extreme at one point where I was like, I don't even want anything to do with them. And that's what was a huge red flag for me. And knowing that depression runs in my family. Finally, my mom, being in the mental health field, was like, you're going to go talk to somebody. So they arranged all the child care so I could go see a freaking doctor. It was like seriously a group effort anytime I needed a couple hours away. And that in itself, I'm not a person to put burden on anybody. So that in itself was so hard for me to ask for help because I don't want to put anything on anybody. But to make a group effort to take care of my little tribe so I could get to the doctor was huge. And so I got to the doctor and I just remember crying for an hour. And she just was like, you're postpartum and this is fine. Like, she goes, this is totally normal. You're good. I just cried. I don't even think I told her anything. She's like, you don't need to say anything. I see it in you. And so she, so I got on depression or anti-anxiety, what it was. That's how out of it I was. I don't know what it was. I was like, just give me meds. She said, this is not going to make it easier by any means. You're not going to sleep more. She said, this will just take the edge off of everything. Just take the edge off the stress. You'll see a light. She said, it took a long time. I would say 3-4 weeks for it to really, for me to see it. Other people saw it first. My husband saw it, saw me kind of have a lighter feeling about things. My family saw it, saw me like kind of letting go a little bit more. But it took me easily three, four weeks to start feeling a little better. And by that time, you know, that the twins were about almost 3 months when I did finally go see a doctor, because I was just surviving for 3 months. And sometimes it was hard to ask people to come help because I didn't want them to see what a shit show it was, because then they'd be like, this is too much for you. You have to change it. But I didn't know how to change it. So I didn't want someone to tell me to change it. So it was a cycle. It was nasty. And my husband and I just spent a lot of nights crying. So 3 months, probably, and then 4 months, I was on the medication. So by the time the twins were 4 or 5 months, things were kind of becoming a system in our house. I had the same nanny. She was coming. She was in nursing school, and the nursing school was right down the road. So she came to my house every day that she wasn't in nursing school. And I was like, I don't care what you call. And the lady that I nannied for gave me more money because she's wonderful. So she's like, just get the nanny as much as you can. So she was wonderful. So she would either take my daughter, which again, I told you was the hardest part about twins, was my one-year-old, because she just was so wanting me. But she also, I mean, you've met her. She loves anybody. She's very easily loved. And so the nanny would also take her on outings and just leave me at home with the twins. And that was a huge break to have her gone. And I could just not speak the whole day, because when you have a 1.5-year-old who's learning their ABCs and their 1, 2, 3s, they ask questions. I have to speak all day. But when she's not there and it's just these blobs, these infants, you don't have to speak. You just can just veg on the bed, literally just be in your bed all day. Sandy Hook happened during that time, and that was horrible. I was in my room, I remember, and my nanny had the babysitter, and I was just in the bed in Sandy, and I just remember looking at the TV in complete shock with these two infants that I, at that point, did not like, and I'm watching Sandy Hook happen, and that was a huge turning point for me when I was like, I need to shake it off. I need to be happy. This needs to be a different perspective. So that was a huge event that happened that helped me, push me into talking to somebody. Again, thinking that we were the best moms before we had kids is so true when it came to these twins because I did everything I said I wasn't going to do. From the formula bottle feeding to sleeping and holding the kids to sleeping in the swing to I did everything I said I wasn't going to do. Co-sleeping, Boppy sleeping. Anything that involved them sleeping was the best idea, invention ever. So at one point, you saw my couch in there. We have a sectional. Or not, yeah, is that a sectional? I think it is, right? Whatever. It's big and comfy. And so my husband, we would put my 2-year or 1.5-year-old asleep. We would get settled in the couch. I would breastfeed one baby, get that baby settled and swaddled, put a binky, give him the sleeping baby. He would get settled in on the couch and hold that baby sleeping. I'd get the second baby swaddled, fed. I would hold that second baby and we would sleep on the couch. And then whenever one of the babies got up, we would swap and I would feed that baby. And if they both got up, he would just make a bottle and feed his baby while I had to feed the other baby. We did that for almost 2 months. And then somebody was like, you got to break that habit. And I wanted to kick that person, but it's true. We had to. So it was time for something different. So we did anything. Swing was a popular one for Wade. He loved the swing until he was able to roll. And then he just got, he's so heavy. He's a heavy kid. So the swing, I think, worked for a few weeks. And Elsie just liked being held. So I just cuddled with Elsie and he slept in the swing. And after we slept on the couch, my husband and I, so for the first few months, I was trying to be in the bedroom. And I was trying to do it normal. You know, I was trying to, like, be there with my twins. They were going to be in the bassinet. I would be in the bed. I would get up, feed them, put them back in their bassinet. No, that was a nightmare. I was keeping my husband up. Again, he has his line of work. It didn't. So I moved out to the living room by myself. That was a little bit more relaxing. But then when I couldn't handle that, that's when we both moved out to the living room. And we both at least got chunks of sleep when we were both on the couch. But then when we had to change it up again, I said, okay, we need to do something that's going to be more permanent. So we got the boppies and we put pillowcases on them and I wedged them in the pack and play next to my bed and swaddled them tight and I shoved them in that boppy so they were kind of like in this hole. And that was the key. That was it for like easily for another 3 to 4 months. That was how it worked. And, you know, and again with my medication under control, my emotions under control, my barrier down with formula, I was getting some sleep. And when I mean some sleep, I mean as a mom of, you know, an infant, you know that I would be like, oh gosh, I slept for 3 hours straight. I slept from like 9 to 1. I'm great today. You know, so that would be for months. That was how, you know, 4 hours was fantastic. And I'm okay with 3 hours here and 2 hours in the morning. My husband, on the other hand, he needs consecutive hours. So he, during the week, would not partake in nightly activities. When we did move to the room, he slept in the living room because he needed his consecutive sleep. And we had it under control in the room. You know, I would at least 3 hours at the beginning, and then it moved to 4 hours, and then it was like 2 hours in the morning. And some mornings, Lainey got picked up. Even before she was awake, someone would come pick her up and take her, so I wouldn't even have to leave my room in the morning. And sometimes our best sleep would be from 6 to 9 a.m. And I would just not leave my room. So it became easier. No, it didn't become easier. It wasn't easier. It just became normal, more and more normal. I remember one time when I ran into other mom twins, when I run into other moms, when I had infants, and they tell me their stories, you know, in my head, you know, I sympathize, and then in my head, I'm like, you don't even know. But when I run into a twin mom and they tell me stories, I'm like, thank you, especially if they had twins that were older, I'm like, there's a light, there's an end to this, and when they tell me positive things, I cling to it. This one time, a twin mom, they were only a few months old, and I said something like, it's only got to get easier from here. And she's like, oh, no, it doesn't. That put me straight into a downward. I was crying that whole night. I was like, she has twins, and she said, it doesn't get better. That was the only twin mom, though, that I don't know. They come in all walks. So I don't know what she was, you know, what happened maybe in her life, but every other twin mom said, yes, it gets easier. You get to understand them. And so sure enough, after that first, you know, the year – It was a mess. It was a mess. And then after a year, we did not have our master bedroom done in our house. So I was like, I can't sleep in the room anymore with these twins because they see me, they hear me. So formula breastfeeding pretty much for the first 5 months, but it was a lot of work. And so my mom is a dairy goat farmer. So we have access to raw, and she could pasteurize it, but she does milk tests. She knows her goats. So we have access to raw goat milk. It's very healthy and clean. And so they say raw goat's milk is almost complete the components of breast milk. It's closest to breast milk. So I was determined to get to like 6 months breastfeeding and then formula feeding as well. But I think I got to 5 months and I was like, okay, I'm ready to start introducing goat's milk. So we started, my mom pasteurized it for the first few rounds just to be safe. And their guts took it. It was fantastic. And so we went from formula to goat's milk and breast milk. And then by about 8 months, I would say I pretty much stopped breastfeeding. It was just so much work. And I remember, it was really funny. I remember being at my house and friends would always come visit me and I'd be breastfeeding twins. You know, I'd be set up on the couch and I'd be breastfeeding twins. And anybody that came to visit me at my house, there was always the time they had to leave. Clearly no one could stay at my house the whole time. Everyone that left always, I could always feel it in them. They felt nervous leaving me. Like they were like, is this woman going to be okay? But I've got to leave this craziness and get back to my life. But everybody was always cautious when they left me because they were worried about me. Everybody. Especially if I had two twins on my boob. And they'd be like, can I get you water? Here's grapes. Here's a remote control. What can I do for you? I'm like, nothing. Just go back to your normal life and leave me here. But it was just a roller coaster for the first year. And finally getting them on goat's milk was a huge relief because, again, not having that formula stigma, which I was over, but not having that over my head. And then knowing I wasn't solely responsible. And we started the rice and then we did everything. By about 6 months, I was introducing food very fast because I was ready. I was ready for it to be not me. That all moved very quickly. But by a year, I was in the room with them still because our room wasn't done. And I was like, I can't be with them anymore. They hear me. They want their bottle. They want me. So my husband and I slept on the couch for the next 3 months because our room wasn't done yet. So we just lived on the couch and the twins got the bedroom. And finally our master bedroom got done and we all got our space and the twins had their cribs. By a year and a half, we just all got a really good system down. Now, systems change all the time. I mean, that was one thing I definitely learned. The moment you think you get your kid in their system, they're like, psych, we're going to take a sharp left here and throw a curveball at you. So I was ready for the systems to change. I was more adaptable. And I think that all had to do with medication and more sleep because those first 3 months when I was not sleeping and I was very postpartum, it was scary. I don't think I was ever in any position to harm anybody, for sure. I think I would have recognized that and my family would have. But it was sad. I just cried a lot. And I just felt really responsible. As we were saying, you know, you're the ultimate caregiver. It's not like you can just be like, okay, now to the next person. You're the person. You're the mom. And so it was a lot to handle in those first 3 months, but it did get easier. It did. And Lainey was always the hardest, even up till now. You know, they're 3.5 and she's 5. 3 is a weird number. And I've always heard mom say that 3 kids is the hardest. Like, if you're going to have 3, you might as well have 4. But I'm not willing to chance having twins. I'm just not. It was that traumatic. I can't do that to my family, my 3 kids, my husband, myself. It's just, I don't want to put myself in the possibility of having twins again. So we're not going to have any more. But 3, I've heard, is the hard number. And I know for a fact, because if one of my kids is gone, it doesn't matter which one, they're now at the point in their ages where they all just, they form these alliances in odd numbers. And so if one's gone, they don't have that They're either playing independently, which is fantastic, or they're together. And it's still, they're still playing cooperatively. And so always the, it was always her. She was always the hardest. She's the easiest child. She's the biggest rule follower. She's the most cautious. I never had to cover outlets covers. I never had to be worried about toilets. She's the most cautious child. But just the third, that just her being at that age, she was the hardest of the twins for the first 2 years. But once the twins started walking, every milestone was fantastic. When I didn't have to carry them all over the place, when they could crawl and meet me places, when they could walk, when they could ask me questions and tell me what they wanted, every milestone was a, just another huge weight off my back. And every year now, I mean, those milestones came really fast when they were small. But now every year I feel a little bit more freedom. And so moving up here this year before my oldest reaches kindergarten and they're 3 and a half, I now am confident that they're not going to walk onto the main road. I know they're not going to eat berries off the back tree. I mean, they're probably going to do some stupid things and get hurt, but I'm not concerned about their safety. You know, they can run around the house and I can go 20 minutes without seeing them and not feel like they're in harm. And there's a checks and balance system with the three of them. So there's always one of them that's willing to come tell me what's going on, especially if they're the one that's being ostracized by the other two. But it every year, every milestone, it just becomes a way more of a unit around the house. And it makes me more and more confident of not having any more, because I just am not willing to go back to that first year once we've gotten all this. So
that's intense, man.
Yeah. My second story is a lot more intense than my first. I just, that's why also, I think maybe in between them, had I maybe you interviewed me about my first pregnancy, maybe I would have had more to say about it. But when you have, when you go through a pregnancy and a labor like the twins in first month, now I look at that one and I'm like, that was a walk in the park. I'll take one child. I always tell my friends and my sister, when you're pregnant with your first and you have your first, don't feel guilty about not getting off the couch the first 3 months. Because when you, with your next, you have no choice. You have to be busy with that child when you have a toddler. So when you have that firstborn, you can be a vegetable, no questions asked. So soak it up.
Okay, so towards the end, we usually ask the mothers if you could like summarize your experience, even if you just want to focus on the twins birth or mm-hmm. both births, with like a word or a phrasing of words, because we separate these stories into themes, and the themes can be anything. It could be connection or sensory stuff, like the physical experience mm-hmm. of it, or faith, or whatever. So you can kind of think that's a huge question to ask.
I really feel like the postpartum is a huge part. And I've discovered a lot about myself, and I don't know if my hormones changed or what after kids. I stopped antidepressants after a year and a half of being on them, but just recently, within the past year of my life, just the move, leaving my system in Tucson, even though we're super close still, and I'm, you know, my kids are older, it put me back in the category for anti-anxiety, and so I am open to it now. And not that I wasn't open to it before, my mom's very pro counseling, pro medication, but I recognized it. The red flags were really very obvious for me. So maybe just, you know, emotional and postpartum is really where I put a lot of myself when it comes to deliveries and pregnancies.
Can I ask you one more question?
Sure.
What did it feel like having two babies moving inside your belly?
It's crazy. It's the weirdest feeling. I mean, you're constantly, you know, when you have one baby, do you have kids? Okay. When you have one baby, you feel, you know, you're like, oh, a hand, a foot. When you have two babies, it's like, oh, finally a break. Okay, no, just kidding, not a break. Always, there's always pressure somewhere. And it's to think there's two craniums in there and four legs and four arms is... And all, you know, I love IVF, and I actually have a very dear friend who went through the IVF process, and I think she would be... Did you already do your interviews in Phoenix?
We have, it's an ongoing process.
Oh, it is? She would probably be a really cool story for you because she actually has had some very, very, very sad previous stories to where she found out when she couldn't have a baby and why she couldn't grow a healthy baby. So she went through an IVF and an egg donation process this past year. And so she has a 3-month-old from this process. She has the coolest story ever. And I forgot where I was going with that. But, yeah.
About caring too.
Just having the two bodies in there and the two everything. It's just.
Did you have like really bad acid reflux? Because all of that. Was
oh
like...
man, spit. I mean, anything. Anything made me have acid reflux. I was like, anybody that suffers with this regularly, I don't know why you just don't get your esophagus ripped out. This is horrible. This is the worst. I'd sleep sitting up, not because I was uncomfortable, but because all the acid was coming up. It was horrible. I was saying because naturally the twins grew, right? Two eggs versus IVF women that, you know, get three or four eggs put in them. And so they know that there's that chance. But to honestly be just like sideswiped by the fact that you're having twins and you didn't think it was a possibility was just a whole new perspective for me. So it's, and now, you know, then of course my sisters were wanting to still have kids. And they then discovered that they have this genetic trace of twins. And since then, my older sister's had a third child, not twins. And then my youngest sister is pregnant with her second, and she doesn't have twins. And I think she'll be done. And my oldest is done with her three. So they didn't have twins. But I anytime I hear of a woman that's pregnant with twins, I open up that story. I said, it's not pretty. I did join a multiples group, which I always feel like is my biggest advice to moms that have multiples, is get part of a multiples group. Because like I said before, when you talk to moms of, as we call them, singletons, when you talk to moms of singletons, you kind of are like, okay, that would be fun. I would rather that. But when you talk to moms of twins, you just, they just know and they relate, and it's a pretty crazy world.
Yeah, I can imagine when singletons are complaining, it's like, that's charming.
That's cute. That's really cute. Yeah. You know what? I went to a breastfeeding class with the twins, actually, to kind of get a feeling for how to feed them both. And I was like, when people look at someone like they're not real or they're like they're fictional. I felt like that was me in this breastfeeding group. I felt like women were looking at me, being like, we don't have it that bad. I'm like, thanks. You want to take one? Gladly. Yeah. I only felt like if a mom of triplets walked in, would I feel put in my place.
Yeah, how would that breastfeeding work?
Not. You don't. I did see a picture once of a mom feeding twins, and then she had a bottle. Like, she was feeding them and had them propped up and then had a bottle in the third.
That makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, you do what you got to do, and you'll survive. And everyone always asks me, I don't know how you do it. And I always tell them, you would do it. When you have no choice, you do it. And you complete your day, and then you get up. And seriously, 4 a.m. would hit. 4 a.m. was the time that I'd give myself to drink coffee. If I was up any time after 4, I'd brew coffee. And if it became that time, it was a new day for me. I was like, this new day. This is a new routine. The sun is up. The rest of the world is up, which is a huge relief because in the middle of the night, you feel like you're so alone. So the rest of the world was up. And my dear college roommate, her mom is straight from Mexico, very Mexican. She told me, honey, drink a beer every day. Drink a beer. It doesn't matter if it's 9 a.m. or 2 p.m. Drink a beer every day. So that got me through some months. I would be like, my coffee. And then 9 a.m. would roll around. I'd be like, I've been up for 8 hours. And then, seriously, I'd drink a beer, I'd relax, my milk would just gush. It would be fantastic. So, and my doctor that I had told you about that said, if it feels good to you, you know, he said, you know, drinking and breastfeeding is like drinking and driving. If you're too drunk to drive, you're probably too drunk to breastfeed. So it's in your system, it's in your bloodstream. So if you feel like you've had too much, sleep it off, and then the next day you can breastfeed because it gets out of your blood, it gets out of your milk stream. So if you're, you know, and I didn't have the energy to drink any more than one beer, to be honest. And so I was like, one beer, I was ready to just relax. But it was a challenge every day. It was just a new adventure.
That's a good ending.
Yeah.
I like that. My neighbor told me that Guinness
yes
helped your breast mm-hmm. milk come in, and I had never drank beer, and then I drank a Guinness.